And hello, everybody. This is John Bridges from your friends at Guild Financial Advisory, Masters of Finance. I am very, very proud and happy to bring to the microphone today Andy Warne. Andy is Managing Director of National Milk Records. Now, Andy, thank you for joining us this morning and welcome.
Thank you.
I have been aware of your company's title for some time. Remind me for how long I might have been aware of National Milk Records as a business, as a public company.
Well, I'm not sure if you were alive in 1943, but if you were alive in 1943, that's when National Milk Records as an organisation started.
Thank you for the cue, Andy. That gives me an opportunity to say I was actually 1 year old at that particular point in time.
OK, well, you can be forgiven for not noticing our formation.
I won't interrupt again, however. I'll let you carry on and take us through the history, please.
So 1943, coming out of the back of the Second World War, and basically the country didn't have enough food, and so agriculture was challenged to produce more food. And you had the formation of things like the Milk Marketing Board and the Potato Marketing Board. And National Milk Records was an organisation which was a very, very early benchmarking exercise. So local farmers got together and they would measure the yield of their animals and the fertility of their animals. And they would then be able to compare how they were doing versus their contemporary farmers in that area. And National Milk Records was then the national combination of all of those milk records. So from there, part of the Milk Marketing Board, when we joined the good old Common Market, that the agricultural levy boards were then split up. Competition was brought into the food supply industry. And so all of the services provided by the Milk Marketing Board were then spun out either as private companies. And you had the farmers' co-op, and you also had PLCs. And little old NMR was spun out at that point as a service provider to the dairy industry, but as a PLC. That was in 1997, so we've been a PLC since 1997.
That is when I, of course, first became of you as a name. So you listed on a junior market.
Yes, we've had many iterations of these junior markets. So there was JP Jenkins, there's been Offex, Plus Markets Group, and then the Next Exchange. The latest iteration, which is Aquis, we have a lot of confidence in. And we believe the Aquis market is getting its act together. We certainly believe they seem to be doing the right things and trying to drive the right level of governance into the small end of PLCs. And also working on the liquidity methods, such as getting more of the digital markets enabled onto the Aquis market. So we think they're doing the right things, and it certainly works for us. When you look at our share price and the performance of the business, it's not within milliseconds that the market will respond. Obviously, the liquidity on the Aquis market is lower. But over time, we believe that the share price, the ticket price shown on the Aquis market is a fair reflection of the value of NMR.
That is very important to hear from you. It is very important to listeners to this podcast to hear as well, because a number of them will be companies who are contemplating a listing on the Aquis market and who will have heard some of the criticisms over the years of being a public company at this end of the marketplace. Mm-hmm. They will be substantially reassured by hearing from you, a practitioner and an operator of an important company on the Aquis Exchange, that so far as you're concerned, it is working, and it's working very well indeed.
I think as a small plug, I would also say when I say it's working well. Just at the moment, you can see that there is market research, a research note on NMR in the marketplace, which shows our future value. And you can see that the price of the company on the market today is less than that research note. So if that's not a signal to somebody to go and sort of say, actually, I think I might get involved in that, then
And can you remind me who has written that research note?
So that's our market advisor, Canaccord.
Canaccord, a well-respected operator in the marketplace. I enjoy black coffee. I put milk in my cornflakes three mornings a week as a contrast to the other mornings of the week.
Yeah.
For most people, milk is a commodity. They pick it up in the supermarket when they go shopping. But behind that carton of milk is a whole mass of work.
Yeah.
Can you just take us through that carton of milk and what you have done as NMR between the cow producing it and it ending up on the supermarket shelf?
So effectively, we have four revenue streams. So the first one is the original milk recording business. So we have 300 field technicians, and we visit half the dairy farms in the country. So there's 10,000 dairy farms in the UK, so that's 5,000 farms. And we'll visit them once a month, and we will take an individual sample of milk from every individual cow on the day, and we'll also record the yield of that animal and record any health events that have happened to that animal in the previous month. So our field technician has a laptop and a piece of software. All of that data goes into the laptop. The samples come into the laboratory and we'll test them for fat and protein and other measures of quality of the milk. And then effectively, that's milk recording, and the farmer gets back a report, almost the same as 1943, where he gets back a report where we're looking at, you know, which are the better cows. Yep. And the farmer can then breed from the better cows, and the whole genetic potential of the herd will increase with each generation.
So, can I pick you up on one word? You used the word yield earlier on. Yield, is that production over a period of time?
Yeah, so the yield of the animal is very simple to how much milk is she producing.
Yeah.
And so she'll produce, she has a lactation, so she has a calf once a year.
Yep.
And she'll produce a lot of milk immediately after she's had that calf, and then slowly that lactation will dwindle away until she has another calf.
Yes.
But we'll record the yield on that day, and then we will be able to calculate, based on a lactation curve, how much milk that animal will produce during the whole year.
Thank you. That's what I wanted to get at.
So that's the first revenue stream, milk recording. So then the second revenue stream that we have is that we do what's called payment testing. So when a tanker of milk is collected from a farm, the tanker driver will also take a sample of milk from that farm, and we test that sample of milk. Our contracts are with the milk buyers, so that's Arla or Saputo or First Milk. And we'll test the quality of the milk for fat and protein. The more fat and protein is in the milk, the more the farmer gets paid. But we'll also test it for contaminants like antibiotics or just added water. So we work on behalf of the farmers to help them improve the quality and the yield of their animals. But we also work on behalf of the milk buyers to monitor the quality of the milk as it leaves the farm. So we have milk recording, we have payment testing, then we have a third revenue stream, which is disease testing. We're getting the samples of milk, either individual milk samples or bulk milk samples, and we can test them for the presence of disease. So a classic one at the moment is a disease called Yonis, which is a wasting disease of animals. And there's no treatment available for it. So effectively, you've got to, it's a surveillance program for the farmer. They want to identify the animals that have yonis in the herd and make sure that they don't infect other animals in the herd. So we've got milk recording, we've got payment testing, disease testing, and then the new and the emerging revenue stream, which we find very exciting, is now genomics. So we have a big database which says these are all the good cows, these are all the poorer cows. We take a sample of DNA from all the good cows, take a sample of DNA from all the bad cows, and then effectively we can map what the DNA of a good cow looks like and what the DNA of a bad cow looks like. And then when the animal was first born, so two-year-old calf, we can take a sample of DNA, small tissue sample from its ear. Yeah. We can test the DNA and we can effectively go back to the farmer and we can say, this animal has the potential to be a very good cow, or this animal has the potential to be a poorer cow. And then right from the start of that animal's life, the farmer can map out how they're going to how that animal's going to progress within the herd. So not only do we provide the farmer information on the current milking cows in terms of are they good cows or bad cows, and we're also talking about the young stock that's on the farm, and where the farmer can already begin to segment the better animals. And so the first time that they breed that animal, they can breed them with a better quality bull, better quality semen.
I think I get some of the importance of that.
Yeah.
Particularly as the cost of food is going up.
Yeah.
In a very inflationary period of time, which many people have not seen before. And therefore, with the cost rising in a supermarket shelf, what goes before is extremely important.
Yeah.
Not just in the UK, but overseas as well.
Yeah.
Where are you doing this sort of thing overseas, Andy?
So NMR has always been a very UK-focused business. We were part of the Milk Marketing Board, very embedded in the UK in terms of our infrastructure with our logistics network, our network of field technicians. We have got a joint venture in Ireland where we have a company called IML, Independent Milk Laboratories, which is progressing fantastically well. You can see it's a 50-50 JV, so you can see that in our balance sheet. But our big step that we've done, so within this year, we've just published our accounts. You'll be able to see the investment that we've taken in a new disruptive technology, which we've got a license for the UK. We've also bought the license for the US. There's 1.8 million dairy cows in the UK. There's 10 million dairy cows in the US. So obviously a big opportunity. So we've got this new technology called GenoCells. Yep. We have an exclusive license for the US. And people look at that and they sort of say, well, how's little old NMR going to go off and exploit the potential of GenoCells in the US? Because they have no infrastructure. But we do have friends. We have very good relationships with some of the big pharmaceutical companies here in the UK. We have very good relationships with genetics companies here in the UK. Now, those pharmaceutical and genetics companies have businesses in the US. And we believe that we can work with them to launch GenoCells in the US and effectively subcontract the GenoCells technology through these third-party channels into the US market. So we're very excited by it. It's a great opportunity
for us.
And
I'm not surprised. This creates a fascinating future of the business way beyond these shores.
Yeah.
Right, Andy, moving onwards. Disease amongst animals. Is that still relevant?
So most of the disease testing that we get involved in are rather than being what we would call a zoonotic disease, as in a threat to human health, these are all production issues. So the two key revenue streams in terms of disease testing that we have at the moment is Yoni's testing, which is a wasting disease, but also BVD. BVD is bovine viral diarrhoea. Again, it's a production issue potentially for farmers. You can eradicate it in a herd, and so if you can find what they call the PIs, which is persistently infected animals, you can then remove them from the herd, and effectively that herd becomes then disease free.
Right, and this is very important so far as a production of decent milk is concerned.
Absolutely, yeah. And the dairy sector at the moment is in very rude health. We've seen big inflation in terms of farmers' inputs, in terms of fertilizer, and the cost of feed is from the Ukrainian war and the cost of feeding animals, the cost of fertilizer to produce grass to feed animals, is triple digit inflation. But the interesting thing in the last 6 months has been that the farmer has been able to pass on those inflationary rises. So whereas before, the retail sector has always managed to keep a lid on price rises, and the supermarkets in the UK have had to allow those prices to flow through. And so the consumer has seen the price of milk go up, seen the price of cheese and butter go up, but the farmer is in a very sustainable position at the moment in terms of the being able to pass on those inflationary costs.
And has the consumer's buying decision been affected?
You can start to see the consumer moving away from some of the branded cheeses. So the higher-end cheese, the sales have begun to tail off a little bit.
Yep.
But at the same time, the own-label cheeses, the sales have gone up. So if you look at what happened during COVID and lockdown, people fell in love with cooking again. So sales of butter and cheese went up during the lockdowns, and they've stayed up. You know, 98% of households will buy dairy products, and the mix is changing. So effectively, people's breakfast habits are changing. People are tending to eat croissant rather than cornflakes. So liquid milk is pretty stable,
yep.
But sales of cheese and butter are going up.
I'm thinking of my own cheese buying habits for a moment. I have perhaps chopped one or two seriously expensive ones off my list.
Yeah.
But maintained my my level of purchase of regular types of cheese.
I think the thing which people always mention is the growth, and I'll come back to that word, growth,
yeah.
of dairy alternatives. So, you know, almond milk, potato milk, or oat milk, or whatever. And people instinctively hear the noise about what they call the dairy alternatives, and think that the consumption of dairy products is going down. Well, in fact, it's going up. And just the story of alternative milks is, people are going, what, really? If you go into a Costa or Starbucks and you sort of say, oh, well, I'm going to have an almond milk cappuccino or an almond milk latte, and you think you're some sort of eco warrior because you're having an almond milk latte, and you've just got to ask yourself, well, how many almonds do you think there are in an almond milk latte? And people go, wow, yeah, God, there must be hundreds. You know, think of all the almonds that have been lovingly squeezed out in order to produce my almond milk latte. You know, this is a plant-based diet. On average, your almond milk latte, there are two almonds in it. The rest is just filler and water and whatever it is that they can make. It's processed food. And that story, slowly but surely, is beginning to land with people. So we believe dairy is a good place. It's a very sustainable, very nutritious food. And a lot of our problems in terms of how we organise ourselves as an industry is in messaging that and getting the right messages out to the public, simply because, you know, we're fighting against, if you like, the big food companies. And, the big food companies have an interest in processing food. They haven't got an interest in just buying some milk from a farmer, putting it in a container and selling it, simply because there's no added value there. You know, their ability to squeeze margin out of that value is relatively low. If you look at a carton of milk and you look at the ingredients, what's in it? Milk, 100% milk. They haven't got the ability to mess about with it. Whereas with a dairy alternative, it's, you know, look at the ingredients which are in a dairy alternative product, and it's basically a manufactured product. And so that manufacturing element allows the big food companies to add value, add money, and so they make more money out of a dairy alternative than they would out of selling a straightforward dairy product.
Andy, thank you. Listeners, food is amongst you. Please take note of what you just heard. It all makes sense. milk and cheese, real milk and cheese, is the way forward. What tempted you into the business, Andy?
Well, when you start to think about what NMR does, we are one of our key strengths is our logistics operation. We're driving 6 million miles a year. We have we work 365 days of the year. We have a very significant logistics operation because we're bringing samples of milk into two laboratories, one in Glasgow and one just north of Birmingham. So it is quite a big logistics operation. We run our van networks from 4 o'clock in the afternoon through to about 11 o'clock at night, bringing samples in, and then we'll be testing something like 30,000 samples of milk a night, and we report the results by 6 o'clock in the morning. So my pedigree is I used to work for TNT Logistics, but then I came into NMR almost exactly 20 years ago now. I didn't get a gold watch, by the way, but so I came in 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And I wasn't really planning to sort of say, well, I'm going to stay in this business for 20 years. But what we do is worthwhile. It's a strange thing to say, but we're involved in the food industry. We're involved directly with dairy farmers. And I get up in the morning and I think, well, what we do actually makes a difference. And that's priceless. So that's why I stayed. It's a worthwhile business.
I'm glad I asked you the question. I like your answer very much indeed. You came in because you were a trucker. You knew how trucks worked.
Yep.
And you knew how important it was to NMR that trucks worked properly.
Yep.
And then you fell in love with the business.
Yep. I mean, I can remember the second day I was with NMR, I went to what was the Royal Show at that point. And they had the best cow competition, and all these cows were being led around in the ring, and all these farmers were standing around the ring looking at all these effectively pretty cows.
Yeah.
And I, as somebody coming into the business, I was looking around going, what on earth is going on here? This is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in my life. And then the farmer who wins the best cow competition puts their arms around the neck of this animal and starts to cry. And I'm looking at this and I'm just going, I don't know what's going on here, but there's something going on here which is precious, and it's that relationship between the farmer and the animal is something which once you get involved in the industry and you get involved in it, you start to see it and you sort of think this is something which needs to be nurtured. And a lot of what we do is involved in just protecting the dairy industry in the UK.
And it happened to you and you stayed.
Yep.
And the rest, as I say, is history.
If you take it back to NMR as an investment, let's think of NMR as an investment. So what we have is we have a very, very reliable, we've talked about formation in post-war years, we've iterations of the business. So we're talking about a very, very reliable revenue stream, very, very reliable value added in terms of a food production industry. But the most important thing is that the technology that we're getting involved in at the moment is disruptive and enables us to then come up with a business plan which shows significant growth going into the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years. So we're very bullish, if you excuse the pun, about the future. But it's the, you must never escape the fact that we're, when you look at the small end cap business, there's a lot of, I don't know how you want to put it, fly-by-nights or whatever. We're not that. We are a business which has very reliable revenue streams, and we collect 70% of our cash by direct debit, and we're in a very stable environment, but with significant growth opportunities.
Ladies and gentlemen and listeners, I've been looking forward to this interview for a long time. You can all now understand the reasons why. Andy is the managing director have a very interesting, exciting business with clearly a tremendous future. Andy, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
It's been a privilege to have you. I look forward to our next meeting. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe on your favourite podcast app. This content is issued by Guild Financial Advisory Limited, which is authorised and regulated in the United Kingdom by the Financial Conduct Authority for designated investment business and is a member of the Aquis Stock Exchange. Nothing in this podcast should be viewed as investment advice. Listeners should consult an investment professional before making any decision regarding topics mentioned in this podcast. The views expressed in this podcast are those of the participants and not of Guild Financial Advisory. Please note that participants within this podcast may have financial interests in the matters discussed.